Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. If you like a determiner, TheDorkForest.bandcamp.com is where premium episodes are. All of these episodes are free streaming on iTunes or DorkForest.com. Anyway, let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song you just heard. He's going to sing again at the end of the show, his words to the Mexican hat dance. And Vilmos fixes my website, JackieCation.com. JackieCation.com has everything else besides the Dork Forest. Like, it has merch if you want merch. If you want a t-shirt, Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt, or a Dork Forest t-shirt, or one of my stand-up CDs, or the Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt from my stand-up, you can get it there. You can get my DVD there. You can watch me do stand-up comedy on some videos. You can look at my schedule. I'm in Los Angeles this week doing a bunch of sets, but next, I think New Year's Eve is the next time I go out of town, and that is in Minneapolis at Acme Comedy Company, recording my new album. The website is also the home of the Support the Show page. Support the show every other month, not December and November, but every other month I ask that you donate to the Dork Forest. In November and December, I ask that you donate to a local food bank. Find a nice charity. Get somebody a sandwich. You can do it. Google the name of your town and the word food bank, and that will help. So do that. You can support the show by using the Amazon banner on the Support the Show page. Support the Show page Amazon banner just takes you to Amazon, and you order like normal, and then the Dork Forest gets a little bit of a kickback. Doesn't cost you extra. It's just we get a little bit of a kickback if you order through that banner. There's a tiny Amazon icon on the front page, or you can use the banner on the Support the Show page. I have another podcast called Jackie and Lori over at Nerdist, where I bitch about stand-up comedy. And this is the Dork Forest, and I think that's the whole thing this week. Let's get to it. It's a good one. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm in my living room with Caitlin Gill. Crab apples, all the things. Hello.
Hi. It's so nice to be here, Jackie.
It's very cool. Okay, so it's at Robot Caitlin with a C.
That's it on the Twitters.
Right, and Caitlin is tall.
That's on the Instagrams.
Instagram. And you are tall.
I am very tall.
I remember the height. When you were standing. Right now you're sitting.
Yeah, I am seated now, which is a less intimidating position for me to be in. The height's all in the legs, baby.
It's all.
I put it all in the trunks.
You got legs for miles.
Miles, huh? Mile. I got, mountains worth. I got two skyscrapers. I just perch on top of them. Skyscrapers with knees. That's what I'm working with.
Oh my God, where's that children's show?
But it's like a weird skyscraper that's like wider on the top. You know what I mean? It's a rare design. A very impressive architect.
That feels rare and wonderful.
Built my high-rise legs. Yes, good the weather Lord. Is nice up here, Jackie.
Is it nice up there?
Is the
air rarefied?
The air is clean.
It's clean?
Yeah.
Is it thin?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excellent.
I'm a little lightheaded most of the time.
Lightheaded at all times. You are not over 6 feet, are you?
Yeah, I'm 6 foot one. I'm just hunchy, but I'm 6 foot one. Yeah.
Okay. So loom.
As I grow into adulthood, I've learned that occupying my space is a thing I should take pride in. But it takes time. I'm still working on that. I wish I wasn't. I wish I was really good at that.
Well,
it's a lot of space to take up.
It's a learned skill. Being okay with what you look like.
Yes. Yeah,
and
it is.
And how you are.
You can't miss me. I don't blend into a room easy, Jackie. I'm going to be honest.
Oh.
I don't. Even if I'm a wallflower, I am a noisy, misarranged flower.
Clomp.
Falling out of the wall that you run into as you walk by.
I'm a much shorter, holy fucking terror.
I feel like that offers an anonymity that I envy in some ways.
Right, being a shorter, bit of a disaster. No, I still get a lot of attention.
You're hot stuff, Cation.
It's, sure. People are like, did you just trip over nothing? Yes. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. A lot of people don't know that about me. Do a
I
lot of physical
over something.
Comedy.
It was a shorter person, but I just try to.
Exactly. You're constantly finding tiny people to trip over.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Anyway, so You do stand-up comedy.
I do stand-up comedy.
You're going to be at Cobb's December 22nd.
December 22nd. I'm so excited.
The Bay Area, because you're from the Bay Area.
I'm from San Francisco.
So you're going home for the holidays.
Going to go see the fam a little bit.
Going to go look at them.
Going to go stare at their faces while we eat things.
You got to do it. And then Crab Apples, your show, you do it at least once. I think you do it once a week at the Improv,
Gosh darn Tuesday night at 10 at the Hollywood Improv Lab. Me and Bobcat Goldthwait host a little stand-up comedy and variety affair. It's really fun. I also shouldn't say Bobcat's name and my name and the word affair in the same sentence. Exactly. The rumor mill is already grinding, but kids, get over it. I live with my girlfriend in his basement. That's the extent.
And Bobcat's career is on fire, as he likes to say, because he has roommates who live in his basement.
50 question mark with roommates. That's it. Everything's coming up Goldthwait, as he would say. And as I would say, 35 and living in the police academy guy's basement. So we all have our burdens to carry.
My burden is that I've been trying to get him on the program for about 10 years.
I'll try to twist his arm about that. Yeah, not that I have any influence over him.
You don't have any influence.
But
and
I do
he's not even in
occasionally
town right
just
now.
Put him in a car and drive him places without telling him where it is.
Oh,
so
there you go.
We should
guess
coordinate
what's
that
gonna
at some
happen.
Point.
Yeah. And so I think that's what Moon Zappa did with Beverly D'Angelo. She's like, hey,
that's
you're going to be on the Dork Forest today.
I saw that. That's awesome. Bobcat's a good buddy. We do that show together every week. I love him so much. He's the greatest.
And so you're doing Sketchfest, though, with that show.
Yeah, we're going to go up to San Francisco and do Sketchfest. And then I'm also going to do McSweeney's Internet Tendency show at Sketchfest, which is both going to be so fun. Sketchfest is it's just one of my favorite times of year.
Sketchfest is a comedy festival.
A three-week comedy festival in San Francisco. It is an extravaganza. They finally put but they put hotel deals up on their website this year. Because, it's worth traveling for. And you're going to end up staying 2 weeks. Because there's a lot to see and do.
Oh, my God. 2 weeks. That's hilarious.
If you're a comedy fan, it's an irresistible month. Bay Area residents are spoiled by that festival. I hope everybody snags tickets and goes to the shows.
You could also just move to Los Angeles and see everybody.
That's right. You could not go to those shows every night of the week, as people in LA,
do. You can also not go to the ocean, which is what I do.
Right, yeah.
It's very sad.
It's good to have those options.
So, Caitlin Gill, I will say this, is that your dorkdom made me laugh, because I was like, I vaguely know that.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a reader. I'm a reader, and yet I got nothing.
Avid reader. I was surprised by that, honestly. I would have thought you would have found his books...
As a child.
Yes, at some turning point.
There's books that if you miss them, the window is shut.
Yes, it is.
And Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy I read just at the perfect time.
Yes. What was the perfect time for you, Maine
for
McGuire?
For me, it was late, too. It was 19.
Oh, I like that. I tried it in middle school and I got through it, but then I got it in college.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Because you have to celebrate sarcasm to like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But you also have to be a little bit of Smarty Magoo, I think, to get sort of the irony and the sociopolitical.
What's a word that isn't sarcastic, but it's a step away from sincere? It's like sincere about something false. Hitchhiker's Guide does that so well.
An excellent work.
You know, I guess it's an analogy or a metaphor that I'm talking about. Like
There has to be a word for that, and I just can't remember what
that
word
might
be. I don't
know what it is either. Somebody's going to type it in the comment section somewhere.
Feel free to email me what that word is. I know that you know. Okay, so.
My dorkdom that I'm bringing to the table is an author that I found at just the right time. Six-ish to nine were the formative times.
That sounds about right.
That's when I, as a fan, emerged. Like, my fanhood started to take shape, and I really went nuts through high school.
Currently, you were still thinking about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So,
and that person said...
Roald Dahl.
Roald.
That's all I hear most of the time. Roald Dahl.
Willy Wonka.
Yeah,
right?
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator, the follow-up novel, which is also excellent.
James and the Giant Peach
and the BFG and the Witches and Isio Trot. People sleep on that one, but it's great. And Pally and the Giraffe and...
Wait, what's the one people sleep on? What's it called?
Oh, Isio Trot. It's just a cute, shorter children's book about tortoise. It's tortoise backwards.
Oh, it's tortoise backwards.
Mm-hmm. That's a
good
one.
So it is.
Oh, Fantastic Mr. Fox is his.
Oh, I saw that movie.
Yeah, it's a very cute movie. The movie is different from the book, and it was the only modern adaptation whose changes didn't make me furious. They made me a little bit angry, but they didn't make me furious. So that was nice. Well, Tim Burton, right?
Did
the other Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah.
I can barely remember because I only watched it once, and it was through like a film of white hot rage. I don't know if you can really see a movie through the just white flames.
And stick it out?
Yeah.
I can.
It was terrible.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's a series I don't know as well, so I don't know the compromises they made to turn that into a film.
It's blessed because it's a really good movie.
Right.
But it's not a great adaptation
yes.
for me. But that's just for me because other people like it. They like it better than The Hobbit, but I like The Hobbit adaptation better than The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
And it is weird. And I've read all of them. But here's the good news about all adaptations into movies. They're still books.
Yeah, you could just read them.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun? They're available.
That's what
they
I like.
They don't take the books away when they make the movie. That's not the common policy. They don't just remove every copy.
Right. Exactly. We're done with the books now.
Yeah.
It's only this version.
This is what we have.
I do like the original version. Of Willy Wonka a great deal.
Oh yeah, me too. I have a huge soft spot for that.
How does that hold up compared to the book?
I actually still watch it a lot because it has a great riff tracks with Neil Patrick Harris and Mike Nelson, so I will rewatch that I've fallen asleep to that movie. I fall asleep to Mystery Science Theater 3000 just about every night, or a byproduct of it, either a cinematic Titanic or a riff tracks.
Right.
It's something, can I tell you a romantic story? Do you want a romantic tangential story?
I do want a romantic.
This is so gross. I have a sweet lady. I love my sweet lady very much. We lived apart for a year when she was still in the Bay and I had moved down here to LA. And we found this website that we both like. And if you are a fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000, then check out clubmst3k.com. It's got links to every episode. And it's a cute little MST3K community commenting to each other about episodes. It's all adorable.
Yeah.
One little feature they have is a counter for how many people are watching that episode right now.
Oh,
so we're both nightbirds. We'll go to sleep at 3 a.m. and we're texting like gross little lovebirds like, well, what do you want to watch tonight? I don't know. How about Mitchell? And then we'll go on and maybe we're the only two watching. And maybe we know that only two people are watching that
because
episode right now. And it's the
Club
two
MST3K
of us. Club MST3K.
Like, oh, there's this. And how do they get that number?
I have no idea, but I decided I trust it.
Because okay.
It gave us our 5-0 under the same stars moment, so we'll take it.
And why would they lie?
Why would they?
There's nothing in it for them.
But yeah, that's the thing I love very much. So Willy Wonka does have a riff tracks, and I've watched it many, many times, and it holds up marvelously because it's always absurd. Like, Doll's World holds up because it was it's a snapshot of a place and time. You can't really pull his stories out of their context. If you make an adaptation of a doll thing, you have to put it right where he wrote it.
Really?
I think so. I mean, it's part of why...
You can't make, like, how people, like, update Shakespeare?
I mean, I'm not saying you can. If you can update Shakespeare, of course you can update a doll. And people have, like, Four Rooms has a doll story that is that you've seen a bunch of times, probably.
What's
if
Four
you
Rooms?
Ever, Four Rooms is that movie directed by four different directors. It's a movie about a hotel, and there's one bellhop running between each of these four stories directed by four different popular directors. I know it was Tarantino, Rodriguez, and then somebody else.
And somebody else.
And somebody else. And I think it was Rodriguez that did I believe the story is called A Man from the South. And the Man from the South story is about a young strapping dude sitting by a pool, snapping his lighter, and a mysterious guy who bets him that he won't be able to strike that lighter 10 times in a row. And the stakes are very high. It is a fancy Jaguar that the creepy guy owns versus the little pinky of the left hand of strapping young buck. And that story has been adapted for, I saw it first on The Twilight Zone,
okay.
I think, and then, or Alfred Hitchcock, one of the two, I forget, and it doesn't matter. It's in black and white, and it's old, and it was Nick at Nighty, and it's ingrained somewhere deep in there. And then it was in Four Rooms.
Boy, am I glad I didn't get you coffee.
Right?
Go.
Yeah, I talk fast.
Yeah. Well, it's nice.
It's not on 1.5 speed, everybody. This is just naturally.
Right. And the weird thing is people say I talk fast. So this is awesome.
I hear that all the time and I'm just not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
You're just going.
You can.
Which is great. So, wait. So, okay.
He made a whole bunch of short stories that are for adults, and those have been adapted many times
When did he write? Who the hell is he?
That's a good question. And he wrote a memoir that answers some of those questions called Boy. And another one, B-O-Y, another one called Going Solo. And those two books are on my short list of favorite reads ever.
Oh, wow.
Boy is a beautiful memoir of childhood. And
really?
Yeah, it's exceptional.
Like a Norman Rockwell childhood?
If you read Dahl, Dahl is a master at knowing exactly how dark children are.
Yeah.
His books are evil and gross, and terrible things happen to children and adults, mm-hmm. and they're weirdly mm-hmm. violent.
Yeah.
But it is never beyond a child's capacity or a child's imagination
to comprehend.
Yeah. It's exactly digestible. That's such a skill. And young
that's
adult
an
reuse literature blows my mind because that's an amazing line to walk.
Yeah.
But he does it so, so well.
What? Okay. So Boy is about his childhood.
Yeah. Little Tiny Tot.
What was it? What? How?
So
what years? How old is he?
I want to say he's like my grandpa's age, like 1914-ish is okay. when he was born. And I can subtly look at my phone while I continue to babble about Roald Dahl to give you that actual answer. But
no,
he was old enough to go to Africa and write about so he went to boarding school. How to start?
So he's British.
Yes. He's so British and also Norwegian. Okay. I believe his dad was a Brit and his mom was Norwegian, I believe. Okay. His dad. It's just from that era where everything sucked, always. Like, they were kind of well off. They were doing okay, but there was no medicine. Booze was the only anesthetic. Like, nothing was good. His father, when his father was 14, tumbles off a roof, loses his arm, spends the rest of his life eating with this multi-purpose utensil that's a spork with a sharpened edge.
Right.
Which is a metaphor for how you solved problems then.
Right.
You don't make it like it was. You don't get an arm back. That's not coming. You sharpen a goddamn spoon.
Exactly.
And you stab.
And you keep going.
Shovel your gruel.
You get gristle
with it.
Exactly. Was there gruel and gristle?
Yeah, I imagine that's what his dad ate. I can't confirm that, but it's in my mind.
Okay.
And then when Dahl was a kid, automobiles were brand new. His sister's driving one. They have regular glass everywhere.
Yeah.
They're
not made safety glass
to survive in.
No.
And of course they crash. And of course Roald Dahl goes flying through the window at 7. His nose just sliced right off his face.
Wait,
just dangling
no
by
nose.
A piece of skin. They sewed it back on. They brought him to a kitchen table, brought a drunk doctor out, strapped him down, sewed his nose on. Good luck, kid.
Yuck.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah, that's
And he goes
a lot.
To Norway, which he did every summer, and he vividly describes this visit to, like, the dentist, doctor, barber, whatever the fuck they had.
Right, veterinarian.
And adenoids, if you have them, unpleasant thing. You get them removed. They're little lumps in your throat, make it hard to swallow or breathe or whatever.
Okay.
There's, like, a procedure for that now.
Polyps? Are different from adenoids?
I think so.
Okay.
We
don't know. We're not medical.
According to my medical diving, yes. They're different.
They are different.
But he describes this all, and boy, you know, now what that would happen, or he doesn't describe now, but now what would happen is you get time off work, you get anesthetic, you get gauze, you get sterile things.
Right.
Then he goes in, he doesn't know what's wrong, nobody tells him what's happening, he just sits in a chair, and the doctor's like, well, we're going to get these out, like wipes off a scalpel and just whoop, whoop. Like, cuts these lumps out of his gosh darn mouth, and they come spill it out into a little spit bowl, and he could see him, and nobody told him it was coming. That's the childhood that informed the kind of writing that was to come from Roald Dahl.
Holy fuck.
So that's the childhood he describes. He goes to boarding school, he gets the shit kicked out of him. I swear a lot.
Because he's tiny?
He's tiny, and it's just mean. Every social group, it's weird English social shit, where if you're younger, older kids get to kick the shit out of you, and that's just how it goes.
And he read an article that said that the word nerd was not a real word until John Hughes movies, and then Andy said, did you ever get beat up when you were a kid because you were a nerd? And I said, and I couldn't think of any time when anyone called me a nerd or a dork or a geek or anything, but I remember being beaten up a fair amount of times, but I think that was just childhood.
Right. Yeah, that's just being a child.
Yeah. Children beat up other children, it turns out.
In this case, it was institutionalized.
And it was
the system for beating children was well established with rules and codes. And it was codified by the school. If you were like a younger kid, you were a steward or something to the older kids, and he describes all this. He describes having to go out in the winter to the outdoor restrooms that they had to all poop in and warm the frozen seat for his
like, dude,
little master kid dude, and then go make his toast, and then go roll a cigarette. Just everything he had to do, you know, until you become that age, and then you're supposed to be that person,
right? And then you get a kid like that, and you got to make that kid do those things.
And he doesn't. I think that's also something that informed his character and his writing later on. He sees hypocrisy or injustice in a situation and has no taste for it.
Right.
It doesn't mean he won't benefit for it. And it doesn't mean he doesn't have some controversial views, because he does. We can get to that.
Okay.
But he graduates from school and winds up taking a job with Shell and going to Africa.
Oh, British colonial Africa.
Yeah, and he traveled kind of all over, but anywhere
like
British
30s.
Colony. Yeah, in the late 30s.
Wow.
So he spends a lot of time there. He writes about that in Going Solo. But then the war starts.
Yeah.
And he's a Brit. And he's called to round up Germans. And that begins his service in World War II, which continues until he becomes a fighter pilot at 6'6", which is bananas.
What's 6'6"?
He's 6 foot tall. He's 6 foot six.
Oh, geez.
So being a fighter pilot is like, that's like.
That's too tall.
Yeah, that's me fitting in an airplane seat. That's unjust. You can't do that.
That's weird. He must have passed the test with flying colors or something.
I mean, yeah, and they take, you know, if you're capable and you're willing to endure the cramps, they'll just let you do it.
Right, but 6'6", that guy could punch people.
Yeah, he could. I mean, he could be an infantry dude, I guess. But instead, he just flew with his, you know, knees around his ears.
For 4 years? 5 years?
He flew from a bunch, and he got shot down not once, but twice.
Wow.
Yeah, and recovered and wound up in New York, you know, short-circuiting a few things.
Right.
Telling this story at lunch to, I forget what magazine the person worked for, but the guy just said, write this down. And he did, and he submitted it, and that story is called Piece of Cake, and it's the first writing that he did as a professional, and it just started this deluge. He'd been a letter writer his whole life, but
Right. He
took this kind of collective memory and sense of the world.
Yeah.
And sort of determination to craft it all into something, and started writing. He wrote a book called The Gremlins, which the 1984 movie is said to be very loosely based on, but it's about little gremlins that appear on planes. It's like a...
Oh, weird.
He was like making a lighthearted fantasy of a very terrifying vision pilots would have while flying.
Oh, okay, because they see things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're up where there's no air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
Speaking of rarefied. And okay, wow.
Then this cool thing happens.
What cool thing happens
next? There's been a kid who goes to Norway a bunch. He flew through a windshield. He lost his nose. He goes back to school. He gets kicked around all the time. He goes to Africa. He goes to war. He goes to New York. And then the people are still – when he was in New York, he found it – he was in there in some window while the Brits were fighting and Americans were not yet fighting in World War II. And
okay.
British intelligence was trying to use him to pull Americans closer to involvement. And the way he was sent out to do that was to be a Lothario. He essentially
He was seducing people.
Yes. He was part of this pack of, like,
British,
fancy, intelligent men of just the right age who had just been
fucked,
like, just messed up in the head enough to manipulate people and also maybe pretty physically built. And he just went out and banged every wealthy or bride or mistress of anyone with secrets he could find and just got as much information as he could. And he's not the only famous person that's done this. This story is out there about a few people.
Wow.
It's
And so it's 1940 and he's doing this.
Yeah. This would be 40, 41.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before Pearl Harbor, obviously.
Yeah.
Weird.
So he's known as quite a cocksman.
Okay.
And then he just keeps writing. And I mean, I know nothing. When I found Matilda, I didn't know who
you
this
wrote
guy
Matilda?
Was. He wrote Matilda. And he wrote the BFG. And I don't know if I said that already, but
you
those
did.
Would have been the first two that I found when I was a kid in like
when
elementary
like
school. First grade, first and second grade.
Huh.
And I mean, little Caitlin. Was not good at being little. I hated being a kid. I was bad at being a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my 30s now, and this is my time to shine, baby. This is so nice. Forget elementary school.
Right. That is not what you were looking for.
I just had this sense that stuff was more messed up than people were letting on. And these little pains that are like pain that I felt or things that I was sensitive to was real, even though they tell you, you know, don't worry about it or you're a kid, you don't understand. There's just this sense
that
stuff's amiss. And Dahl's work taps directly into that kid. If you're that kid and you read Matilda, Matilda has terrible parents, and they are bad.
They're
not
bad
redeemable.
They're irredeemable.
She's right. Her situation is not good.
What is her situation?
Her parents are...
Spoiler alert, we're going to talk about a book that was written 100 years ago.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the story of Matilda?
Matilda's this little girl.
How do I not know this? Whatever.
Matilda is a little girl brought up by parents indifferent to their kids. They have one son who's just kind of a shitty dude, takes after dad, and they're fine with him. But Matilda is a quiet, intelligent, bright girl. And these people want to eat and watch TV. They don't want anything to do
with their children.
Yeah, their children at all. Anything they need is a nuisance. Her dad's crooked, a crooked car salesman.
Okay.
Her mom plays bingo every day and leaves her alone.
Wow.
So at three, she just starts toddling down to the public library and starts reading everything in the world. She reads and reads and reads, and her parents basically don't notice. They forget to send her to school. They finally send her to this terrible school called Crunchham Hall, where Mrs. Trunchbull is the evil headmistress. But she finds – and all that stuff is bad, and all those people are bad, and she's right to be afraid. And then she finds a person that she can and should trust – her teacher.
She finds a good teacher. Okay.
In the meanwhile, Matilda's been discovering that her intellect goes beyond just her mind. Her frustration begins to manifest in true power. She moves things. She does things with her mind. She moves stuff around.
She's telekinesis.
She has some extra power. She's a little telekinesis stuff.
She's a superhero.
So she manages to use her powers for good. Another lesson to learn. Whether they super or not, use your powers for good.
Always.
If your intuition tells you you're in a bad situation, you're right, even if you're a kid. And if your intuition tells you that you can trust someone, they might just be good. Mm-hmm, like, some people are really good.
Some people are decent.
In a dark world.
In a dark world, it's fine. There's plenty of good people, and you can trust your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
BFG, too. BFG, yeah. Sophie, the little orphan girl in an orphanage.
Yep.
Sees a literal giant with a trumpet sticking it in people's windows.
Yeah.
Giant sees her. Giant can't be seen. Giant takes her and runs her off to Giant Land.
Yeah, yeah.
And Giant's kind of stuck because he can't really take this person who knows about her back. But also every other giant eats people. So she's in a dangerous situation. She has to be brave, figure out who to trust. She has to use her wits.
Just, right.
You know, he writes...
Is there
daughters,
a new movie coming
girls.
Out?
BFG came out last year and it was really good. I liked it.
Okay.
The effects, they were fine. But the story, I thought they nailed. The spirit of it was really good.
Then that's fine. There you go. I don't understand. What was I reading when I was six? I know. Dan Frontier.
Okay.
It was great. And a lot of dog books, a lot of horse books.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. A British colonial as well.
Okay.
But so this guy, so he writes Matilda and BFG. Those are for little kids.
Yeah.
Are there other ones up for little kids?
Yeah. A whole bunch of them. The Twits is about... Oh, shoot. That's kind of about a kid and an evil set of... It's all about kids and evil families. So it's James and the Giant Peach.
James and the Giant Peach, which I also have not seen.
Yeah.
Which was also a movie, and I understand they did a pretty good job with
that.
They
did a great job. It's beautiful. Okay. And it's an early one. I think it's like 96 or something. So it's that time when practical and like animation effects were it's an interesting point to look back at. It looks pretty great. I like it.
It looks great?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good.
And that's a sweet story. Mm-hmm. It's also about.
Is it about a boy with a giant.
It is about a boy with a giant piece of fruit. Yeah. Basically.
That's the whole tale?
It's his magic escape, essentially, from a rough family life is traveling around on this crazy peach.
Right.
Yeah.
Do any of these parents just have one arm and a sharpened spork?
No, I don't think I'm not sure that he was working out issues about his parents. I think he was also kind of a shitty husband and maybe a tough dad to have.
Oh, wow.
Like, his wife, I hope I'm getting everybody's name right, but I want to say that was Patricia O'Neill, wound up having a stroke and rolled down. Like, the reputation is basically that he rehabilitated her by, like, bullying her and walking again. And it works, and she recovers, and then he leaves and marries someone else, like... He's a distant guy. He's a tough, like, you know.
Right.
He's part of that generation of men like my grandfather whose life heaped traumas upon them and gave them no tools or equipment to unpack any of that weight.
Right.
So I bet he was a lot to be around.
Yeah.
And if he is writing about a parent and a parent's issues, you know, it's so visceral and it's so clear. He's writing about himself. He's not unpacking something mysterious about his
that
own
happened.
Life. Yeah.
Oh,
he fleshed that out in a memoir.
Okay.
I think every evil character is a little bit
himself.
Of him. And every good character is his kids.
Oh, really?
That's my guess.
Okay. Wow. Like, I don't mind that.
He randomly, because why not, he had a gypsy caravan. And that became his, like, writing palace. And in that gypsy caravan, he wrote a story about a very sweet dad and a very sweet boy called Danny the Champion of the World.
Okay.
And I think that story has such a very sweet heart about it.
Yeah.
That I think that might have been a good time for Dahl. He had a daughter that died, and he, like, forsake his faith as a result and stuff.
Wow.
Got unsurprisingly dark, because everything with Dahl is dark.
Right.
But something like Danny the Champion of the World is, like, much lighter.
Okay.
Still a dark book. There's still odds.
Must have been a good couple of years, is what you're saying.
That's I would hope. Or
right.
if he does write about himself, this is Caitlin's conjecture. This is Caitlin's corner. This is not me. I'm not quoting
Caitlin's conjecture.
But I think, you know... If he writes about himself as a parent and other parents, then maybe that dad he wrote is a good version of himself.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that a lot of, like, people I admire, too. Like, I'm not a Woody Allen fan, but I'm not mad at anybody who is, I guess. Like, you know, some of the people we admire probably have really challenging aspects of their personality, which is a good time to mention that Dahl said some really shitty things about Jews.
Oh, did?
Yeah.
Oops.
He also said some really shitty things about Christians, but guess who hadn't been killed in the Holocaust in the last 10 years? Christians.
Exactly.
So it really resonates more when you come for Jews, especially the way he did. He got
after
real sassy.
Post-World
War II, much like my aunt and my great aunt and all of my great parent relative things.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's a streak of Brits who have real virulent, weird anti-Israel sentiment from that time period. If you were the right age, experienced the right things in World War II, you just come out on the other side with this bitterness that's real hard to shake. And he
that's
made
right.
a few statements that if people hear that I'm talking about Dahl and they're like, forget that guy. He said some terrible things. You know what? You can do that. That's fine.
He had anti-Semitic comments or anti-Semitic, but not actions.
Not actions. He surrounded himself with, like, everyone who he worked with or for was Jewish. And also, quick reminder, RAF fighter pilot who shot down Nazi planes.
Right.
And fell from the sky not once, but twice. Went back out to do it.
Right.
I thought a lot about impact versus intent, which is something that if you're thinking about social justice right now, you should be thinking about. Your impact matters more than your intent. If you said something shitty, but you didn't mean anything by it, and it still offended someone, that impact matters more than your good intentions.
Right.
But also, if you're a dude with weird views or who says something crappy about he's a contrarian who wants to make people mad. So if you're willing to do that stuff, and that's your intention, what's your impact? And if your impact is also that you are an RAF fighter who shot down Nazis, it's a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag.
Complicated guy.
Yeah.
But I'd be remiss not to say that I know that, and it's a bummer, and I have a tattoo of Roald Dahl on my ankle, which we can also talk about, but if somebody wants to call me out on that aspect of his personality, I can't argue with that.
I don't know anybody who doesn't have feet of clay. You know, I mean, especially, I mean, now we know everything. Every Twitter, every tweet that everybody's ever said and with some crummy comment that you've made in life and bad life decision. So when you look back on some of these people, it's too glib to say you can separate the artist from the art.
Right.
I think that has been used glibly, or jibly. It's a hello. I love those movies. Anyway,
he also tells you in his writing who he thinks villains are. And they are duplicitous, manipulative people. He tells you in his writing, and then he writes them of all stripes. He doesn't,
He's not saying that all white Christians are the devil. He's saying that I don't like some white Christians because they're full of shit.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. And he does a pretty good job of explaining himself, especially in his short stories. There's this television series in the UK that I didn't find out about until I was a grown-ass woman, even though I was a huge fan as a kid. Because if you didn't have the internet at the right age, you didn't know what was on in British television unless it was on
PBS.
PBS.
Yeah.
Then they didn't, as far as I know, show Tales of the Unexpected, which are all, ironically, a little bit predictable. But that aside...
a little expected?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, weird topics, unexpected topics, unexpected guest stars, but most of the time expected outcomes, most of the time.
Tales pretty expected. Okay.
But those are his short stories written for adults mainly, and they're, I think in those especially, it's comparable to a Twilight Zone or for you kids out there, a Black Mirror. It's an anthology series. But I think everybody's bad plan comes back to bite him. In those stories,
there's comeuppance.
His show stories are so excellent. His omnibus is great. Tales of the Unexpected. Skin is another collection. So many good collections of short stories, and they're also good. But one of those themes is like, what you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
And some of them are just weird and fantastic, and some of them are short and very grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But
it seems very prolific.
Oh, he wrote a ton. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
My Uncle Oswald is kind of his, I haven't found that one yet. It's like I don't know how it got re-released or if I just missed it or something, but he didn't write a ton of novels for adults. That was one of them though.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of short stories though. Very satisfying, plain reads. I recommend it.
Oh, okay.
Good for a half hour of total absorption, and then an unnecessary interruption won't come as a terrible surprise to you in a plot turning moment.
Do you usually read short stories or do you read novels?
I do enjoy a short story. I like reading. I don't do enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that frustrates me because I enjoy it of all types. I'm currently working on Studs Terkel's Working, which is a beautiful book about the Studs Terkel just interviews people about their jobs.
Okay. Yeah. And is Studs Terkel his real name?
Yeah. Oh, man, Studs. Studs is amazing. Have Guy Branum on to talk about Studs. I couldn't do it justice. I couldn't possibly, but he could.
Studs Terkel is obviously an author?
Yeah.
A television personality?
Yeah, he's amazing. He's a very prolific and wonderful author about... American history, American life, life in general. He's an incredible figure.
Okay.
He's very, very cool.
Okay.
I don't even want to step on it. He's so cool, and I couldn't possibly mine all the details for you, but oh my goodness. Find
Guy
someone
Branum
who
could.
Knows studs. Yeah, okay. Guy Branum, have a special studs episode for Guy. He would go nuts.
All right.
I love him. So, yeah.
His writing
is terrific. And if you like him, don't worry. He wrote 462 million books. So you're never done reading Stud Circle.
Wow. Is his name? No. His nickname
His name is Stud. No, his name is Studs Terkel. Lewis Studs Terkel. It's a, hey, if you wear studs, wear it.
Yeah. Why? Why would you? So my experience with Roald Dahl is essentially Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about Willy Wonka real briefly.
Yeah.
Because I love Willy Wonka. Uh-huh. And
me too.
How was I've never read the book.
So good.
The Chocolate Factory.
So good.
Right? Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
So you've seen the 1971 motion picture.
I have.
73? I forget. But the 1970s one.
Yep. The Gene Wilder motion picture. I have also seen the Johnny Depp motion picture.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, I see what they did.
Yeah.
And it was fine. But it was not for me.
So unnecessary.
It was, yeah.
Hey, let's take a perfectly written story and then write another story into it.
Yeah, it was a weird. I didn't understand why.
I didn't get it.
Did they make that
movie? Don't make Charlie and Zoo make another movie about a factory that makes candy. You don't actually have to make Willy Wonka if that's not the movie you want to make.
Right, right. And so is it true to the book?
The first one is, relatively true to the book and moves at a very similar pace. So the first part, Charlie. And of course, I've seen the movie.
A bunch of grandparents who live in a bed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All four grandparents live in the same bed, in the same tiny little house, and they eat basically boiled cabbage. Mm-hmm. The loaf of bread is a luxury.
All right.
And there are songs in the book as well. The Oompa Loompa songs from the movie are in the book. The Oompa Loompa doobity doo.
That's cool.
The riddle for you. Yeah, all that is written out for
you. That's his as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was surreal. And I think he actually wrote that screenplay, or he's credited as a writer on that screenplay.
Okay. So he must have done at least a pass or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he didn't die until, what, the 80s?
Yeah, or early 90s, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Yeah.
I should make sure. But I want to say that's like a 93 sort of situation. I could be wrong about that.
That'll happen.
He was old for a long time.
And what... wow. All right. So what about the different kids at the factory? Were each of those?
Yeah. So those are all the five winners. The five winners of the golden tickets that Wonka plants in his chocolate bars to bring kids to the chocolate factory for a once-in-a-lifetime tour.
Yes.
Those are all the kids. Mike TV and Violet Beauregard and Overuka Salt and, Augustus Gloop and Charlie. I think I got them all. And those are... All their vices are obvious. Augustus is a glutton.
Right.
And Veruca is a bratty rich kid.
And they're all in the book, too?
They're all in the book, and it's the same vices, and the same fate befalls them. So they all, Veruca does sit on the golden goose collector thing, and she's a bad egg.
Mm-hmm.
And gum-chewing Violet Beauregard, man, she just can't resist and eats that full meal gum.
Yep.
Mike TV does try to be blasted into the TV and winds up real tiny and has to
real
go get stretched.
Tiny gets stretched. Good Lord.
And this same kind of thing where Charlie... gives them all the gobstopper as a little test. Wonka does. And Charlie gives it back.
Yeah. Okay.
So Charlie's a good kid.
So that's how it closes as well.
Yeah. And they do give him off in the great glass elevator.
Yeah.
And Wonka says, Charlie, the factory is yours. It happens. But the great glass elevator doesn't stop going. And the next book is about their adventures flying around in the glass elevator.
Charlie,
they go to space. They do.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I like that one, too.
Is that one pretty great?
It's pretty great.
Do they run into other people and have adventures?
Yeah.
Is that the deal?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating.
It's worth it. Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator.
All right.
Yeah. Excellent follow-up, in my opinion.
Well played. Well, nice work on the sequel.
Yeah.
Obviously a very popular book, so he was encouraged to write a sequel. Did he write any other sequels?
That's a good question. No, I think just going solo to Boy. I think just the sequel to his memoir.
Okay. And so... what are your do you read them pretty much like I read Lord of the Rings like every year?
Yeah, there are one or two. I just watched Matilda and I've read Matilda and the BFG again recently because you read them in it takes a day. They're quick.
Yeah.
Those are the
How
two.
How long is Matilda?
I meant to bring
it. 70?
I found my battered copy of Matilda from my elementary school days with green highlighter on the front cover, but I meant to bring it and I forgot it.
That'll happen.
But it's, I still will leaf through
those.
How
many pages is it? Matilda?
Like 200-ish, 220 or something.
Okay, so it's a
real book.
It's a chapter book.
Yeah, it's a chapter book. Illustrations, bigger type or whatever. It's a kid's chapter book, but it's a chapter book. Yeah.
Okay.
I was a nerd and I was reading like Sue Grafton's alphabet mysteries in like third and fourth grade. I was a big nerd about reading.
Sure. Those weren't appropriate.
No, they were not.
No,
but
they are
much
not.
Like the television I watched that was inappropriate. I didn't get what was inappropriate about it. I watched Blazing Saddles at that same age. There's jokes. That movie is perfect in that it is two movies, one for children and that who maybe should be cautioned not to use some of the language that they put forward in the film. And the other for when you are no longer a child.
Yes.
Rocky and Bullwinkle. Less controversial choice. How's that?
Very nice work. It's I'm trying to think when the first time I read something that was clearly just out of my ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
And it had to be the John Jakes series, 1776.
Yeah.
And there was it was just murder and sex and all these things. And you're like, well, I'm 11.
I'm going to need at least a year and a half before I'm really into this.
Right. And I remember, I think that is what inspired. My stepmother was reading them and I would borrow them and she's like, I don't know. And so I read them and then I wasn't killed. So,
yeah,
I mean,
you did good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing about books is you get what you get out of them anyway. So if you're 11 and you're reading The Chosen, you're going to get kind of that it's a fun coming of age story.
Sure.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be about Palestine and Israel and all these. My sister was reading it when she was 11 or 12.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And she got some guff for it. And, there was some anti-Semitic teacher at our junior high who called my parents and said,
I think every junior high just has one of those by a quota.
Why wouldn't they? Yeah. I remember my dad taking the call and going, it was from the principal who said that she was reading something inappropriate and that the teacher had turned her in or something. And so my dad goes, Darla, what are you reading? And so she brought him The Chosen and he goes, what is it? And she said, it's just a book about a boy growing up and he's got another friend. And he goes, it's not porn. And he says, no. And so my dad is still on the phone with the principal and goes, hey, it's not porn.
So we're good here.
We're good.
Yeah.
She's reading. Shut up. Leave her alone.
Yeah, that's a gold star is actually what she gets.
That's a win.
Not a controversial, god damn it. Just a happy face sticker.
Happy face sticker.
We'll go with that.
Oh, right. No star.
Yeah, no gold stars.
No
gosh,
gold
I'm really just landmining myself everywhere. This is a highlight of, oh man.
Right.
Oh man.
Oh, boo. But I say this is, so what should I read first? Should I read Matilda first?
Yeah, read Matilda first.
Okay.
I think that's a perfect intro. And the BFG is a close second for me. But I mean, I don't think you can go wrong.
Right.
The short stories are great once you have a taste for what he's up to.
Yeah.
Because
they're easier to recognize once you're, and if you run out of the novels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're amazing, but I also loved his tone and a sort of aesthetic before I picked them up. So if they were my first introduction, I don't know what my impression would be.
Right.
But I think if Matilda grabs your heart and then
I've always wanted to read them. I read the Narnia series and it was too late. And but I was just like, and there had been some anger. Someone told me that there was too much Christian symbol. And I had read all of his later stuff.
Mm.
So I had read Out of the Silent Planet and his space trilogy, C.S. Lewis. And then I tried to read Narnia and I was like, well,
it's hard to go back.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
So, but this I think I could get because they're children's books.
Yeah.
So they won't be anything but that for me.
The Witches. How could I forget The Witches?
Yeah. What's
The
Witches?
I also recommend The Witches. Aside from an amazing movie with Angelica Houston, it is,
What?
Yeah. They made that a movie and it's so good. It's just a really sweet, weirder story. Also dark.
Fun.
I love that one. That one's great.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll, cause, right now, post-election, I've probably spent $200 on romance novels.
Oh, I bought a dog.
Did you get a dog?
I got a dog.
What kind of dog did you get?
A dog. It's assembled dogs. It's a tiny little mutt, 5-pound mutt. Looks like a Sheltie.
Oh, five
a short-haired Sheltie, if that's a thing. Looks like a short-haired Sheltie.
So you went to the pound and got a dog.
Yeah, I got
essentially.
Like a
thing.
Yeah,
you're just
shelter
like,
dog.
What do you, you got an extra dog? Oh, you do?
I'll take that.
I'll take that dog.
Yeah.
And then I'll cuddle that dog. And that'll be fun for all of us.
Yeah, I literally got an emotional support animal. That's
well,
been my response.
That's the service that they are to be, that's the service they have created.
Indeed.
So,
are we driving it home here? Do you want a button?
I'm
sorry.
We got 20 minutes.
Oh my God. I thought the way I
No.
Terrific. What else you got?
What else you got?
The Witches?
The Witches.
Oh, man. The movie.
Yeah.
The book is incredible.
Yeah.
The Witches, little kid. Of course, spoiler alert, parents dead within 10 pages because he's like Spielberg in Parallel Early and a lot. Mm-hmm. So he goes to live with his grandmother. And his grandmother knows all about witches because witches are real. They're everywhere. And grandma's had a run-in or two with him. How do you know? Because grandma's missing a thumb.
Oh, another more people.
Yeah, more digits or limbs. Yeah, gone.
That's a callback to his childhood, pretty sure.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So is his grandmother nice?
Grandma's totally nice. Grandma's on his side. But grandma gets a little sick. They have to take a little vacation to the seaside.
And witches follow her around, I bet.
Well, I mean, they accidentally followed the witches. So of course, they're in the same hotel as the Grand Conference of Witches with the Grand High Witch. Which...
Oh, I want to read that one, too.
It's so good. And, of course, our little boy, whose name I can't remember right now. Somebody else somebody is driving and listening to this and veering off the road yelling this kid's name. But he winds up fresh in the mix with the witches.
Okay.
And watch out. If you end up hanging out with a witch for too long, you might just become a mouse.
Ooh, a mouse.
Kid turns into a mouse.
Hello and welcome to Mouse Talk.
I would feel bad for spoiling that for you, except it's in the trailer of the movie. So even if you haven't seen the book or seen the movie or read the book.
It's there.
It's there. It was on your television at some point in the 90s.
What do witches do but turn into animals?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what witches, it's one of their go-tos. And so what about, all right. So... can you turn into a witch by hanging out with witches?
No, they're just gonna, they hate kids, basically.
Oh,
they
want to
wipe kids out. They're real trouble. Yeah, they're not into kids.
They're not positive witches. This is not charm.
No, they're not. And they don't have to look like anybody. This is one of my favorite things. I read The Witches also very young, and the intro to The Witches is not quite the story yet. It's just explaining that this book's gonna talk about witches, and here's a couple things to know. And they did, there are details about witches. They don't have any toes. That's a thing. So they have to wear kind of crummy shoes.
Interesting.
They can't wear fancy shoes. They have claws. They always got to wear gloves because they got these gross hands, claws.
So they, a sensible shoe.
No hair. No hair. They gotta have that front. They gotta have a lace front just glued down. They got a hot wig on all the time. They are always in a wig.
Hot wig.
And their nostrils are kind of current wavy. Like, they're like little seashells are kind of wavy and they're not round like a normal person. It's like, so those are some of the things you should look
for. Wait, they're scalloped?
Yeah, they're a little scalloped. I think that's exactly the word. Scalloped. Yeah. Like those,
Scalloped nostrils.
Scalloped nostrils. Just a little bit. You'd have
That'll
to stare to
out.
Notice. But if you look at it, you know, those are the things to look for if you're glancing at a person. Because they blend right in with us. So you have to know what to look for.
Right.
And they have a little purplish blue tinge to their teeth, if I recall correctly.
Hot glue wig and a scalloped nose, nostril.
He talks about that a little in the intro. And then there's Quentin Blake was his illustrator. Beautiful illustrations for all of his work that I love very much. And he drew a little picture.
Oh, did he do most of the books?
Yeah. Two women side by side and ask you to pick which one's a witch. And one of them is, you know, blonde and pretty and smiling. And the other one is a scraggly brunette with kind of a long, pointy face. Mm-hmm, but if you do your homework and you actually look at which picture, you see those scalloped nostrils and you see that little hairline. And who's it on? It's on
the good
friendly
looking.
It's
the
on
the friendly
that
looking.
That nice one reeling you in.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
that,
how they get you.
As a giantess of a child, I was a tiny ogress. I was a lump. I was just a lump of child.
A tiny ogress.
Dropped into a school.
Could that be the name of your autobiography?
Tiny ogress. Just a blob of human meat wrapped in uncomfortable skin. And I felt like people looked at me like a stringy haired creep. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that picture like, no, some of the ones that look nice are really mean.
Yeah.
They're kind of evil and they're out to get you. And you have to look past, you know, whatever stringy hair or in my case, you know, reverse, like, I don't know what was happening with my lumpy mesh at that age, but
I know that I was poorly attired.
Yeah. There was a good heart in there. There was a good heart under that Bugle Boy, Boyce Mervin's section, Husky Boy section of Mervin's shirt. There's a good heart.
You're doing good works. You're doing good works.
That's right.
And it's actions again instead of intent.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. He's good at that.
That's the rule.
Oh.
He does do this really excellent sort of, like, that doesn't seem, it is interesting, like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and then is there another one that I saw? Nope. But from what I've seen of the trailers of the different movies, talk about Caitlin's conjecture. Let's do Jackie guessing.
Yeah.
It is that that the children are all pretty solo. Like, they don't have other kid friends, usually.
Yeah. That is kind of a thing. It's a bit like BFG, Sophie the Orphan, mm-hmm. who's a little too smart for the orphanage and knows the people who are running it are like not doing a great job or kind of mean.
But she doesn't have any other, like, other orphan friends like Annie.
Not really. Yeah,
like,
no.
She's not finding, she's not head of a gang or a team.
Danny, the champion of the world. Little kid, no friends, doesn't bring anybody over because they have houses and he has a caravan.
Okay.
And he loves his life and his dad thinks it's the world of his dad, but he knows that people maybe.
It's going to be weird.
That book, you don't get to your older, like, oh, they're gypsies and they're being discriminated against. But you don't know, that's not explicitly stated.
Okay.
As far as I recall in the actual book.
Roald Dahl. Turns out pro-gypsy.
Pro-gypsy.
There we
go. So there you go.
The
one
Romany
contingent
people,
that he actually,
The Romany people, he was on board.
He
so
was.
Good for him. Having a, liking a caravan.
Yeah. He did like a caravan a lot.
So he got married and had kids. Mm-hmm. How many kids did he have?
I want to say three. Can I, well, here's the thing. I'm turning the lens back on Caitlin here.
When I'm
a fan of something, as I said, at some point my fanhood evolved and the way I am a fan formed itself. I want to know what I want to know and I don't want to know anything else.
Fair enough.
And that's not to exclude myself from bad information. Like, I want to know if somebody I admire has a side that I should be aware of or something.
Right.
But there's things I'm curious about and things that I'm not.
Right.
I mentioned being a huge MST3K fan.
Yep.
I believe that Joel left the ship and Mike was sent up. I don't want to know what really happened between the real people that were producing that show and so angry about different things and fighting about what the show should be and how it should grow. I don't want to know any of that.
No.
I have accepted the narrative of the show. Joel left, Mike came. That's how this works.
That's how
Joel is on Earth. He came back. He's managing. As I recall, he's like the night manager of a fish fry. I think he's very happy.
He's happy in his work.
I accept that. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Roald Dahl exists to me inside of that gypsy caravan writing in the way he's described that he's writing, either drinking or trying not to drink, smoking or trying not to smoke, writing or trying to just get anything done, in a state of pacing and frustration or asleep. Those are the only two ways he exists.
That's it.
I bet he wasn't a fun husband. So I don't want to.
I
haven't dug for those details.
You haven't dug for those details.
I accept the truth of that.
Right.
But I haven't looked.
Yes.
His granddaughter owns Knuckle and Claw on Sunset Boulevard, the Lobster Shack. So go eat a sandwich with a relative of a doll. That's the best I got for you.
I now want to.
I know.
Wait, his daughter owns a
his
lobster
granddaughter,
shack?
I believe. Granddaughter or great granddaughter. But I think that's Sophia Doll or Sophie. She has written cookbooks. She's an amazing lady herself. But one of her little ventures is the establishment Knuckle and Claw on Sunset that does lobster sandwiches, like lobster rolls.
Wow.
Yeah.
I may go get one today.
There you go.
I like a lobster
roll. A lobster
roll
is a tasty item.
It's a damn delight.
Yes, it is.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Napa, California.
Napa, California.
I spent 10 years and a bunch of years in San Francisco and Oakland.
That's right. Okay. So it's all sort of middle
Bay.
Of California,
yeah.
Bay Area. I'm going, this will be up long after, but, this tomorrow.
Yeah.
I am driving up to do a bunch of shows, like in Oakland.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz, Walnut Creek, Mill Valley.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple of nights.
The Stomping Grounds. I'm sure I know those shows.
Yeah. There are all these shows. And then Thursday, Dash Kwiatkowski.
Yeah.
Who's Superman dork on this very program.
Mm-hmm.
Got us a gig up in Arcata.
Yeah, I love Arcata. I went to school at Humboldt State.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And he said, it's about 3 hours north of San Francisco.
That's a lie. He is lying to you.
Such a lie.
That is a terrible lie.
And you know what it is? It's a one-nighter lie, though.
Yeah.
So it's a lie that you're like, I've lived that lie before.
I know this moment.
It's
a
five-hour drive.
At least.
And,
if you don't stop at all. If your car runs on 5 hours with no gasoline.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a six-hour drive.
Yeah, it's a six-hour drive.
It's another trip
easy.
To San Francisco from Los Angeles.
It is. It's equidistant. It's the same day of driving.
All
I've
right, then.
I've done that many times.
Okay,
yeah.
Good to know, because
mm-hmm.
we're going up there, and then we're doing the show, and then we're driving back the next day.
Yeah, you can do that.
Oh, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
I haven't done it since the 90s.
Take your time.
That's not
Have
true.
A nice breakfast, those bagels. Stretch your legs around the plaza. The morning's a good place. People aren't up yet with their drums and their dogs and their marijuana for sale illegally, even though it's legal now.
Right. Someone was – oh, I know. A friend of mine was telling me she was listening, and I'm going to make this as blurry as possible because it's an anonymous program.
Sure.
And she was listening to an anonymous program up from that area,
mm-hmm.
and there was people talking about how they used to make a lot more money selling pot
when
it was illegal,
mm-hmm.
and now they're trying to do it legal, And there's a lot of paperwork, man. Yeah. Man, yeah. There's a lot of paperwork.
Man, bringing me down with bringing all this bureaucracy. Down.
There's bureaucracy and, you know.
It's like they don't want me to rent this rental home, punch holes in the walls, and grow mildew in every fucking surface so I can have 25 plants in every house on this block.
Right. And so it's, I guess medical marijuana was hard on Arcata. Right. I'm sure it was. Where you're like, well, but didn't you want it to be legal? And you're like,
well,
yeah, I did.
I mean, I didn't want to go to jail. I just wanted to make hella money.
Yes, that is exactly, I believe. And so there's a journey going on there. Yeah. What I'm telling you.
It's been an evolution. I went up there for weed, no doubt. I loved weed. I love weed still. But I was particularly passionate for it at that stage of my youth. I've never been on any kind of antidepressant or psychoactive drug prescribed to me. I think I made that choice right about 12. When pot came into the picture, that like, oh, this does most of that. I'm going to use this for me the way like my cannabinoid Adderall receptors
and
respond.
Prozac and
this is doing it. I'm not going to fuss with that formula.
That's what everybody. When I grew up, it was everybody just turned to beer and pot.
Yeah.
And used it for that. Yeah. And then if you were lucky, you didn't get addicted to beer and pot.
Right.
And, but then, so you kind of weeded yourself off as you became an adult. Weeded. And so, but I think, what I use I do actually use books and I've been reading these mystery novels, but, with the political climate as it was, I had to stop reading Helen McGinnis because she wrote during World War II and the Cold War.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I had too many parallels. I can't actually face it right now because I have to actually get up and face it. So that's not going to be a good escape for me right now. So I read six of her novels. So I'm doing some romance novels. I've been given two Bones books by my in-laws.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
It sounds like time for youth literature to pop back in your life. The metaphors are simple.
Yeah.
You can sail right through them.
Right. You'll see bad guys that are
vanquished.
Thwarted.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I need.
I know you like a happy ending.
I do enjoy a happy ending.
Yeah.
Huh? There's a dick joke.
Yeah.
My favorite dick joke, and I did this on Jackie Laurie's show. So, Rangers, if you're listening to both, you've already heard this. But my favorite thing, Andy and I, this is my first big relationship, right, that I'm having with Andy Ashcraft. And my favorite thing that happened was, I think he's just been hanging out with me as a comic too long because we were, and he didn't set it up on purpose. We're literally in bed one morning, and we wake up, and he says, "How'd you sleep?" or whatever, and because I'm stretching, and he goes, I said, "Well, I think I have a couple of knots in my neck." And he goes, "Do you want me to rub one out?" And I've been doing stand-up a long time.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah.
You know what it means.
Yeah, that's served up on a platter.
Yeah.
And so I'm like the hungry wolf in that cartoon with the fork and the knife and the napkin tucked into nothing, just like panting at the table for that joke. You can't.
Right. So there's this pause, and I just kind of look at him, and he goes, "Yeah, I don't know how me masturbating is going to help you, but I'm willing to." I was like, "Oh my God, you nailed it. You stuck the landing on that joke."
That's so good.
I said word none.
Yeah, you just look. No.
Yay, Andy Ashcraft.
I love it.
So I think I will. I think I'm going to actually go. I have a set tonight. I'm going to go to the Barnes & Noble, which is the thing that will have Matilda.
Or I
could go to the Iliad. Might have it as well, the used bookstore.
They should all have copies with illustrations, too, because that's one thing we haven't talked about is Quentin Blake. And this
Quentin Blake.
Yes, this career-long relationship between this artist and author who really, really meshed incredibly well together. And they're simple drawings. They're lines and sticks, but they form the picture so perfectly. And
oh,
I think
really?
That's also an so apt just, analogy for Dahl's writing.
So they're just pencil drawings.
Yeah, pencil pen. Yeah, real easy.
It.
He's done watercolor work. His work is incredible. And he's written and drawn for other things, but for what he does with Dahl, it's like color on the cover, but as you flip through your paperback pages, it's just these little black and white kind of
jump-ins. And he does the covers as well?
Yeah, he does.
Quentin Blake.
Yeah, Quentin Blake.
That's great.
There are editions with other artists, but I mean, for the true Dahl experience, you need an edition with the Quentin Blake drawings, and as nice as you can find them, however they'll suss them up is great.
Because
it's such a simple, clean, like, it's a simple, messy, clear style. That is perfect for kids. It looks like a kid drew it, but it's perfect. It's very approachable, but beautiful art that I think just does incredibly well with the stories.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I wonder, Because he must have started doing them from the beginning, right?
I don't know when they found each other. That's another thing I never cared to find out, because to me, they just always existed together.
Right,
I never had
together.
A copy of that book. I wasn't around, you know, to read a doll book when it would have been released, you know,
right,
as an excerpt in a magazine
the 50s or
something.
Yeah. 60s, right?
Yeah, that would have been straight through. Like, he was writing all the time through the 80s. But those books would have been much earlier.
The earliest of them, right?
And I just only know I exist in a world with them. So
yes.
I don't know when they came into existence before that.
Sometimes I get kind of, I'm watching It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And, remember when Clarence, he's like the new, the Tom Sawyer book.
Yeah.
And, you're like, oh, dude. You didn't get Huckleberry Finn or whatever it is. I always think, oh, you missed the next Mark Twain book.
Right.
No. Or because you died before the next Mark Twain book came out.
And, there's a very sweet story of a woman who did. This is a sad, sweet tangent, but it's worth indulging in. I'll make it brief. The woman in the Bay Area, huge, huge, huge comedy fan. Of course, the nicest person in the world gets a brain tumor.
That'll happen.
Who's she friends with? Everybody. She's just so magnetic, and she just came to your shows. She supported headliners and local comics with equal enthusiasm.
Aww.
Such a darling. But her story, because she knew so many comedians, kept getting passed on down the line. Huge Mad Men fan. So worried she was going to miss the last season.
Yeah.
Got a call from Matthew Weiner, and she was the only one on the planet who knew what was going to happen in that last season before it happened. And it's so funny because she made it kind of just past that time. And was like, man, spoiler alert for nothing. I could have just waited. She was so funny and would write so well about what was happening to her. But she was just like, yeah, of course.
She passed away.
Yeah.
Eventually, yeah.
Her husband makes great music. Her kids are amazing. But Bay Area Comedy Institution, Laura Kimball.
Laura Kimball.
Yeah, Laura and Paul. Paul Kimball
is the musician. That's neat.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Doug Stanhope has the best stories about her.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Aw, he's got some great stories.
Yeah, of course.
He's a good egg.
He's a good man.
Well, let me tell you something, Caitlin Gill. It's been an hour, which is amazing. And it's at Robot Caitlin on Twitter and at Caitlin is Tall and Instagram.
And I offered you a button. I do indeed have a tattoo of Roald Dahl on my ankle.
Let's hear it.
I got it on an ottoman from a friend I met when I was 5 years old who learned the trade of tattooing in his work in a prison commissary. He wasn't in prison. He'd just go there every day to serve and make people food. Somebody taught him how to do tattoos, and I decided it was a good idea to let that man permanently imprint my body with a picture of Roald Dahl drawn by Quentin Blake. I love it so much. And it's a picture of Roald holding a book and walking. And I got it just as I decided that it was okay for me to believe that I could be a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like him walking, me stepping out into this crazy new direction. And I just try to remember that this guy didn't know he could write until somebody sat down and told him to do it. And he just started. It wasn't a kid dreaming of it. It didn't come into his life. He just found his way into this creative profession. And there's something about that risk taking or that trusting your creative ability and just falling into it that I've needed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this bigger lesson in his story that I've also learned. His stories that he wrote taught me a lot, but the way he led his life and let it start over so many times and was so adventurous.
Yeah.
I think is
an important lesson.
Yeah. It has been good for me. Good for me to know.
And what, was that your first tattoo?
No, my first tattoo is Calvin and Hobbes and it's on my back.
Because I was going to say, it's unlikely.
No, you get your first one in a studio.
And you get
I have the full tattoo evolution. I got a pretty good one in an okay studio. I got, one done on an ottoman over a paper towel.
Oh my
and then
God.
I went to a famous shop with a really reputable artist and got one that's visible. So my two little novice ones are generally not available to the public. And then I have one fancy one.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And when we close the show, I'm going to look at them.
Oh, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Everybody.
Come see me live if you want to see my tattoos. You never know. Maybe it's one of those weird shows I get naked. It's happened before.
All right. December 22nd, you're at Cobb's. And every week you do Crab Apples at the Improv.
Yep.
And you're going to do Crab Apples in San Francisco Sketch Fest and at the Riot LA.
So excited.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am such a fan. It was a real pleasure to come do this with you.
Thank you so much. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?